Wally Lewis is a legend, the king of origin, a fierce competitor, one of the greatest to ever play the game. But behind the dominance is a deeper story. In this episode, I'll dive into what I've learned from listening to Wally about creativity, confidence, perfectionism, and what it really means to be a man. From head knocks and hidden grief to finding purpose in helping others, this is more than just about footy, it's about facing stuff we usually hide and how doing that can be your greatest act of strength. I'm Ian Hawkins and this is Sport is Life. The purpose of sport as I see it is to see your vision become a reality, find your voice, create strong connections and learn to trust your body. Been coaching as long as I have, particularly personal coaching, you start to find patterns. It's also something that I've naturally done well. I've always looked for patterns, found patterns. Comes back to like a natural skill set I have of arranging things. So I see patterns and can arrange data in a way that makes sense. I think I've talked about before the Gallup Strength Finder, the arranger sits to like out of 50 something strengths, it's like two or three for me. So it's a natural thing, but you refine that skill the more you do it. And whenever I'm listening to people talking, even if it's just in the public eye, I look for patterns. So one recent interview I heard with the great man Wally Lewis, I wasn't even looking, but I just started identifying all these different patterns. And I want to share something I want to do more of, and that's if I was coaching a particular person, what would I say to them? What would I address? Where would I go with them in the conversation? Because this has happened a few times, and I've got a few of these interviews that I've heard where just want to share a little bit of an insight into how coaching works, basically. So, if I was to coach Wally Lewis, so in this conversation I was listening to, he was talking about creativity a number of times, and my first question would be about this creativity. One of the early questions in the interview was like, what are you looking for in a modern NRL player? And without pausing, he said creativity. What can they bring to the situation, to the defensive line that gets people second guessing? Now, he then did follow up a little bit later when he said, creativity is something that I got around to enjoying. So I don't necessarily think it was a natural thing for him. I think it was more that the influential people in his life were creative and emphasized that. And so I would be asking him these questions to find out, well, is that the most important thing? Because when I think about him, the player, he was definitely creative, but I'm not sure that was the main thing that made him so great. He also referred back to different conversations with his dad and certain legendary players like Bob Fulton who really highlighted the need for this creativity. So that'd be the first thing I'd look at. What is creativity to him? How important is it? Is it actually the biggest part of what makes him tick? Not so we can go back and change his football career, but just for the rest of his life. How would I help him to be more of who he is in an authentic way, so more of that identity, but also just helping him get the most out of the rest of his life, however long that may be, so it's more enjoyable, more fulfilling, and better for his relationships as well. Now, this was a big one, perfectionism. And I'd want to dive into this with Wally because he used that word perfection and how it was a common theme. He said something like, oh, I remembered it perfectly when he was talking about that sentence I referenced before. It's something I got round to enjoying eventually, creativity. But he remembered perfectly this sentence. Now, again, you might just think, well, that's just language, but it's not the way that I would describe something unless there was a certain pattern around this perfectionism. He talked about Craig Bellamy and how he's a perfectionist and, you know, demands that high quality. And he said, and I can understand that because you need to be perfect. So there's a real theme here around maybe that's more of where he sits. Maybe that's something that where he is wired, because that sounded more natural, something he was more passionate about. And that perfectionism can come in more of a more of an introverted personality, an introverted identity. The person that's good with detail tends to be really good at getting things perfect, but it could also get trapped in that perfectionism thing. So we'd be digging into that. And if you think about it, like, if he's into the detail, and if, let's think about the King. He was an amazing footballer. He didn't necessarily make the best coach from, you know, what the results say, and that can be down to sometimes that players who just are naturally perfect can sometimes find it hard to then pass on the message because they're not sure how to explain it, because it just sort of came naturally to them. And also, I don't see him being someone whenever he's talking in the media as talking to an audience is not necessarily a natural thing for him. He once in this interview, he did relax into it more and you could tell more of who he was, but just in terms of him standing in front of a camera when he's doing the commentary, it doesn't come across as natural. So I'd suggest that he's more on that introverted side, which means he'd need time on his own to recharge. Again, this is purely based on one conversation where I'm not asking the questions, but this is what I'd love to dive into him with him. Like, why was this theme of perfectionism such a big part of the answers he gave across the whole raft of questions? Also, contrasting that, he talked about this time that, he goes, back in these days, one thing I did have was confidence. And he talked about why that was. One of his coaches, I think when he was playing in the Queensland Rugby League, so before it was Queensland Cup, back when it was New South Wales Rugby League or Queensland Rugby League, the two different competitions, Sydney or Brisbane, he had a coach, Ross Ludwig, and he said, Ross was the best. He gave me free rein. He said to me, he goes, I tell everyone on the team what to do, where to go, when to do it, and how to do it. But for you, you get free rein. Do whatever you want. But the only thing I'll say is you need to have that support play. You need to be a good support player. So suddenly he's got this freedom to just go and do his thing. Now maybe that does play into more of that creative element and having that freedom. Maybe he is more creative. But I sort of tend to think towards, well, he had that certainty that everyone else had their roles and he could go out there and create the perfect game to be in control, because for the introvert, that control's an important part of their makeup as well. They're good at finding self-control and helping others feel in control. So for him to have that reign to go and do that without any restrictions, that'd play in perfectly to that perfectionism as well. The bigger issue, really, a lot of the conversation was around he's had head knocks, he's dealing with, he did say, like, basically what the impact of the concussions and CTE is dementia, but he also, epilepsy has been something he's had to deal with a lot. And one of the words he kept using was embarrassment. Again, another one of those patterns. He was embarrassed about the memory loss. And he said the doctor told him, don't be embarrassed. He didn't say he was embarrassed, but the doctor picked up on that cue. He said, look, don't be embarrassed about getting help. He also shared this story. It was like, wow. He talked about how he got concussed in a game. And as he was getting taken from the field, something happened. And the trainer said to him, oh, do you remember what happened? He goes, yeah, I got concussed and then you took me off the field, which he said, I was recalling based on the video footage I'd seen. And he said, yeah, but do you remember what happened? He goes, yeah, you threw me to the ground. And he said, yeah, the reason why I did that is because from the concussion, he was actually wetting his pants, urinating, and he threw him, like rolled him over and made it seem like he tripped just to avoid anyone seeing, because the cameras would have been on him while he's walking off, to avoid the embarrassment. So sometimes when we have these moments in time, they get etched into our memory and then they repeat. And you've heard me talk a lot about patterns, and the pattern of certain things keeps repeating. So if there was a moment of embarrassment from his childhood that keeps repeating, it could have been just that moment itself has created this whole embarrassment about getting seen. Because he talked a lot about, you know, he didn't want people to see, to question whether he was the full quid. He said that's what a lot of men resist finding out about these symptoms, CTE symptoms, because they don't want to be seen to know the full quid. So there was an embarrassment about not everything not working as it should. So what I would do is I'd go deeper into that particular incident, and we would create a circuit breaker to remove whatever embarrassment had come from that moment. He also talked a lot about the embarrassment of having seizures, because he said people would see the real me. So there was this real worry about his identity, particularly the parts of his identity that he didn't love. Again, natural for something like epilepsy when you're having seizures. It's something that if you're not sure how people are going to react, then yeah, you would keep that hidden. Interestingly, which I'll come to later, is that once he actually opened up about that, not by choice but by force, then he actually found that he was embraced, and he got so much purpose from that. But just sticking on that embarrassment theme, he talked about how he did get found out about his epilepsy, because he had kept it a family secret, was that he had a seizure on air. He said the night before it had been coming on just beforehand, and he managed to pull himself together and do the news report, the sport report on the news, which he did. But then the next night it actually happened on air. Like it throws to him, and he's trying to speak, but he just can't speak. And he talked about how enormously embarrassing that was. And what it did, it forced him to stop hiding. So that embarrassment had to come to the surface. And to a lot of degrees, he actually, by that process, he had to deal with the embarrassment. And he also found purpose on the other side of that, because this is amazing. And I used this when I was coaching a elite level cricketer this morning. I talked about this particular moment, because even the best of the best, their greatest moments, most satisfying moments, aren't necessarily the football field, aren't necessarily the sporting arena. And most elite sports people who have had children put having children above that monumental sporting sporting situation or achievement. But he talked about helping other parents and children with epilepsy, helping them deal with it and get help. It's been the most satisfying thing I've experienced. Like, wow, right? So this is the king. This is the guy who achieved pretty much everything in rugby league. And yet the most satisfying experience he's ever had was helping other people. Because this is where purpose comes in. We all need a sense of purpose. And the greatest place that you find purpose is helping other people through something. When you had to do it on your own, when you had to do it in a way that, like he described, embarrassing, what are people going to think? He's helping people so they don't have to go through that. So on the other side of this embarrassment, he found this purpose. If I was coaching him, something else he said, I would reframe how he looks at things. He said people ask me what to do if they've got epilepsy or they're having these CT experiences, and he would say, I can't tell you what to do, but go and see these people and they'll be able to give them the right help. Now what I would ask him to do is switch that and go, yes, absolutely see these people, but also ask some questions about how are they dealing with it. How are they dealing with the emotional side, the embarrassment, the guilt, the shame, worrying about what people are going to think? Is he the full quid? All of these different things. Because that's where he's going to find an even deeper purpose. Instead of just like one level having that satisfaction of being able to steer them in the right direction to the right people, it's that extra part that he has dealt with, that he has had to deal with, that he would have learnt so much from, and being able to pass that on. Absolute game changing. I would also dive deeper into this concept of being a man. He talked about growing up, you know, like the reactions you might get. He didn't specifically talk about his experience, but he talked about how he witnessed when he's there at youth football after his career had finished, watching parents yelling at their kids for, you know, stop being soft, you know, get up, don't be a wuss, all of these things. I imagine him being so passionate about that, he would have had that same experience, and he now knows that actually he probably should have dealt with some of these injuries differently. Because he was asked how many times he'd had concussion, and he goes, oh, what, in a season? And he said, the doctor said, what do you mean in a season? How many times have you been concussed? And he goes, I'd only be guessing, but he talked about maybe 5 or 6 times a year. So if we're talking 50 to 60 concussions in over a career, crazy. So we dive into that, bring back to the perfectionism or not being enough, the embarrassment, all of these different things. You know, like how much of that is grounded in these things that he heard as a young age about being a man. What I've learned, I come back to what I talked about, some head knocks and self-punishment, is I've worked with a number of people who have had repeat concussions, and the things we worked on were that idea of self-punishment and how to completely change how they're looking at that, and helping them realize that all of these mistakes, all of these incidents, they're not of their doing, and helping them see that they're actually not mistakes. They are incidents in life that happen, not your fault. And what working with these people was like, most of the repeated symptoms, the inability to concentrate, the foggy brain, the pain that they would get, headaches, all that sort of stuff, that left them once we cleared this emotional pain around these head knocks. Absolutely fascinating, right? But this is what's possible. We go to the root cause of these physical injuries and illnesses, and we address them, and the body goes into a state of healing because there's no longer that blockage. You've heard me talk before. Emotion, energy in motion. You need to get that emotion out and moving, move it through the body. Like I said, bring in a circuit breaker, release it, and let the body flow as it's meant to. So I'm not going to say that if I worked with Wally Lewis that I would clear all of his symptoms and everything would clear up. What I am saying is that my experience working with people before with concussion is this is what I found. And I've got one of those case studies on my LinkedIn, the other one I need to actually get done. But the difference for both of those people that I'm thinking about now from doing the emotional clearing on those repeated concussions completely changed their life. And the happiness and the confidence that's returned, how it's improved their relationships, their career, all of these different things, because that obstacle no longer exists. And yes, they still will need to address the physical elements, but those physical elements clear up so much quicker when we've addressed the root cause. And the last thing that I'd probably talk to him about was the grief around his daughter's diagnosis with deafness. His state of origin career came to a probably a premature end when he found out about his daughter's profound deafness, and he got quite emotional when he talked about that. And then it was almost like a feeling of guilt, the way he was describing it. And then he talked about his daughter again later, and talking about how the success she had, and again getting more emotion coming into his voice. And I've got kids, I know what it's like. Yeah, they're so important to you. There's a certain feeling of responsibility, and they do make you emotional. But it doesn't mean that you can't address whatever grief is there. Not so you want to remove that memory or try and pretend that it's not sad, but instead not be impacted by that in a way that it's going to impact how you show up, impact how you operate, all of those different things. Because when you can deal with the grief and let that go, then it stops being a thing, stops being a burden, it stops being something that holds you back. So if I was going to coach the king, there's probably a few different sessions we'd have to work on there. But I truly believe by doing all of these doing this work and addressing all of these different issues that had showed up in the patents in the interview. Not I believe, I know that it has such a positive impact on him, on his life in the moment, on how he looks at the past and how excited he could be for the future with a completely different way, looking through a completely different lens of the rest of his days here on Earth, making a difference, helping people, and really stepping into the true identity of who he is and the impact he could have by. I mean, he's already had a huge impact. He talked about the amount of people that have messaged him and called him, and he got back to every single one of them where there was a return number or address. You think about the impact, but imagine the impact he could have if he really stepped further into that purpose. This is the power of sport. This is what I'm so passionate about, helping people in sport, but also through the sporting lens, because this is how we have the potential to create the biggest shift in the human consciousness in the fastest time, because people like Wally showing up purposefully, being leaders, bringing that positivity, not just in this particular space that is important to them, but in all areas. If you know someone that needs to find more purpose, please do share this episode with them, or maybe to someone that loves the king, or like a lot of New South Wales people, have a love-hate relationship with him. If you could do that, that would be most appreciated. You've taken the time to listen to this whole episode. Now it's time to take action. Commit to one thing you've learned today and make it happen. And to avoid any obstructions, join the Sport is Life movement by clicking on the link in the show notes.